This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. And this is my mentor, my colleague, my hero, the love of my life, and also a PGMO assessor, Richard Mellon, who is also the county training officer for Somerset FA.
Hello, Darren.
Our world, sorry. That was really
self-indulgent. Can you feel the love there?
There was a lot of love there. It's nice because we've managed to track each other's time down in such a way that it's not been too long in between episodes, which is great because it's been very difficult to do recently, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Personal commitments, professional commitments and everything.
Absolutely.
And for those that have just joined us, welcome. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for following on Twitter. We've now got 1,900 followers on Twitter, which is great.
Yeah, let's see if we can get to 2,000 now. Come on, who's out there listening
to us? Yeah, come
on.
And a few more likes on Facebook wouldn't go amiss.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad. Hello to Rob Fortune. Rob Fortune, I saw about 10 days ago, said he listened to the podcast for the first time.
Good on you, Rob.
And well done, Rob. Thanks for listening. And I hope you enjoy the rest of them that's on our website.
And we've done 2 years worth now. We're into our third season. Is it our third or fourth?
This is 2 years October.
It is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so yeah.
2 years October.
2 years October. Wow, it's been a great 2 years. Hopefully you've enjoyed what you're listening to as well. And based on the response that we get online through the website, refereesworld.co.uk, on Twitter, on Facebook, it seems that something's going right, so that's good.
Yeah, it feels like it's going right because we get some good feedback and I hope everybody enjoys listening to us.
Good. Now then, if you are listening for the first time, you can listen to us either online through the website, as we've already discussed. You can listen to us on iTunes as well. So that means you log into iTunes, you subscribe for free, then you can listen on your iPhone, your iPad, your iMac, your iThis, your iThat. And basically, whenever we release an issue, an episode, you get notified, you can download and listen. So that's how you listen, and thanks very much for doing so. Coming up in this episode, we're going to plough through some of your emails as well. We're going to discuss when handball is a dogzo and when it's not, based on a request that we've had from Craig Rhodes. So thank you very much for that, Craig. We'd like to say congratulations to a couple of colleagues in just a moment. And we're going to talk nutrition and hydration. Plus, we'll get Rich's magic cards out and do another training topic. So first of all, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations to the first female RDO in the country, Gemma Gale. Welcome to the fray, Gemma.
Hello, Gemma.
I know you're already qualified as a referee, or I expect that's the case. And you've taken the position up with Derbyshire FA. So good luck in that position, and I hope everything goes smoothly for you.
And we understand that we do have some listeners with Derbyshire FA, particularly the RAs in and around Derbyshire. Aussie ref, Paul Bell. I'm pretty sure that he's part of the Derbyshire Massive.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of guys around that area that listen. So not just Derbyshire, but I know Northamptonshire, Cambridgeshire and the surrounding areas. So spread the word and keep listening.
Excellent. And good luck with the new position. I wonder if this is something that will become a growing trend.
I think it's all about the capability of the individual. And clearly Gemma has got the potential to service as a referee development officer, like anybody else.
Do you know Gemma?
No, I've never met Gemma, no. But because Gemma's the first RDO, maybe somewhere close in the future, we might give Gemma a call, arrange to speak to her.
I think that'd be a great idea.
And have an interview for the podcast.
That was kept pretty much under wraps, wasn't it, really?
It is recent news. It is very recent news. It was in the Referee magazine that came out a couple of weeks ago, or maybe not quite as long ago as that, but it's very, very new news.
Anyway, congratulations. And to Dave Braithwaite?
Dave Braithwaite. Yeah, Dave, long-term sufferer of as a league secretary, referee in the 80s when he started along with myself. Dave progressed to level 5 status, got onto the supply leagues. And for many years now, I don't remember the number of years, but Dave has been the secretary for the Somerset County League. And that's a very busy job in itself. And Dave has recently been elected to the board of directors for Somerset FA.
Brilliant. Well done, Dave.
And he sits on the referees committee. I know all this because I was at a referees committee meeting last night with Dave.
And I thought you were going to say that he was pregnant after all these years. Dave, well done, mate. Congratulations. So moving on then, as I've said, we're going to talk nutrition, hydration for health and performance. When is a handball a dogzo and when is it not? But I thought we could start with going through some emails based on the back of the last episode, where we started the programme with a conversation with Brian Lee, who's a new level 4, and we talked to him about how his season was going so far. And off the back of that, we had an email from Dave Brammer. Explain who Dave Brammer is, Rich.
Well, Dave Brammer is one of our colleagues that is an assessor at contributory level. Dave's held various positions within referee administration since he came off the national list as an assistant referee. And I also think Dave made a premiership referee in the 90s at some stage, but I'm not totally sure about that. But he's got a good background in refereeing. And so it's nice to know that Dave listens to us, an experienced official. And Dave was the assessor on Brian's first game. So that's the background to Dave. He comes from Western Supermare, professional man in the banking industry. Mm-hmm. And here he is doing an assessment on Dear Brian.
Excellent. And this is the email that we received off the back of the last episode. Hi, Darren and Richard. Good to hear you back and in good form. Thanks very much, Dave. What a positive start to the season. A superb presentation from Ian Blanchard at Bridgewater the other evening and some good honest views here from Brian Lee. I was fortunate enough to assess Brian's first game as level 4 and can vouch for all that he said on the phone when he was talking with you regard to preparation, and it showed in the game management and control. You may have already explored this in a previous discussion, so apologies if this is so, but it's worth spending a few minutes debating the differing but complementary roles of a coach and a mentor. I recently attended a coaching course for my day job and was told that true mentoring is a phone call. This is what happened. Response from mentor. That happened to me. I tried. Give it a go and let me know how you get on. Is this true referee monitoring? Your views would be of interest, I'm sure. All the best from Dave. Over to Rich.
Oh, thanks very much for that, Darren. Yeah, fair point, Dave. Mentoring and coaching, they are slightly different roles, but there's also a bit of overlap in my view.
Sorry, that's me just scribbling away there.
Yeah, so they overlap in a way, but they should remain separate for what they serve. As a mentor, you're giving sort of, what can one say, some ideas and guidance through a telephone call, perhaps. You don't actually see the referee because with some mentors, they look after, say, 10 referees and they don't have the time to go out and see each referee. But whereas being a coach, you might not have so many referees and your time is a little bit more fair with you and you're able to go out and actually go out there and give some real development through coaching and get out there. You smell the air. The muck and the nettles, and you get an idea what the referee needs to do and how he does it. And when you see a referee doing things, that's when you become a coach rather than, well, do you do this? And you're talking on the telephone. You can't actually see the referee. Mm. You can't actually see the body language or how the decision was sold or not sold or how the decision was dealt with, because people make a judgment about a referee and on how he does things, mm-hmm. not necessarily what he does. The mentor will tell him what to do, but it's how he does it is what the coach is looking for. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, I think so. And I know that we've discussed this on numerous occasions. If you haven't got a mentor, I would thoroughly suggest and recommend that you try and get one. I went through some considerable years without having a mentor until you and I bumped into each other. And, you know, and it was... For me, at times, there were times when I would really love for you to have been at a game. Sometimes when I was on a roll, I would like to have been there at every game, but you can't because obviously your other commitments within football and stuff. So I mean, we spoke on the phone and still do speak on the phone regularly about situations, turning up to a game on the day. I mean, every Saturday, I think we probably spoke, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
And I can't stress enough how important, how useful it is to go into a game having spoken to your mentor as well. It's a shame that mentors can't be around every week, I must admit.
It is in a way, but you know, arguably you can have too much advice sometimes. Mm. So sometimes less means more. Contact on a regular basis is at the referee's discretion if there's a setup going. And if I use another colleague at the moment that I'm talking to on Saturday mornings, I still talk to Mark Lawrence. Mm-hmm. Mark Lawrence is now, I think it's his third year as a level 3. Mm-hmm. And Mark still phones me up now. Mark doesn't live very far from me, but I still have a chat with him to make sure he's in the right frame of mind, tongue-tied here, the right frame of mind and positive thoughts. You know, it's all about personal preparation and out there trying to sell decisions and accurate decisions as well, you know. So the whole package I still talk through, not just with you, when we get the chance, but with other guys as well. And Mark Lawrence is one of those guys.
And this goes right the way up the scale, because I know you're very close friends with a particular Premiership referee who I know phones you every now and again to ask for your thoughts on various things as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, we talk almost every day.
Yeah.
Almost every day, because we're good mates, and you know that was long before he became a Premiership referee. You know, we've known each other for over 20 years now, and you know, some of the things that I was asked when we first met, because I'm a generation of referees older than my friend and colleague on the Premiership, and one of the first questions he asked me was when he came to Bridgewater at the time, he said, "I understand you're chairman of the local RA." He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I've been given your name by Ron Groves," and Ron Groves, in his own divine right, was an excellent referee on the Premiership and became a coach and now retired. And Ron, for me, gave me some solid advice, year in, year out, week in, week out type of thing. Ron put this young referee towards me, and he said, "Give me some tips on what refereeing's about." And I said, "Well, from my experience," and this was in the mid-90s, I said, "Know when to put your hand in your pocket and know when not to put your hand in your pocket." You know, and that means using sanctions carefully, selectively, accurately as well, and that was little bits and pieces. I did that, so that still really is applicable. You know, sanctions are more common in the game today because the game has changed. You know, if we talk about free kicks, Law 12, many moons ago, the word in Law 12 was intentional. Well, intentional was broken down. Now we look at the Law 12 infringements as careless, reckless, or with excessive force. And so that's how they're broken down. So we all know that reckless challenges carry a yellow card sanction. And we know excessive force challenges, serious foul play, violent contact, et cetera, are red card sanctions. So, you know, that's how the game has changed. And I think we have to change with that. You know, that's what we have to do. Those of us that have grown up with it in the 70s, 80s and the 90s, if that's applicable to some of these guys that are listening, we've all got to change with it. There's no point in saying, in my day when I refereed, that's what I did. That's not good enough. You know, an assessor today was a referee yesterday. He has to move with the times, and he should be helping referees develop. Not out there to fault find. He's out there to develop the referees. And this is what it's all about. Mentoring and coaching, back to that. There is a different, there is a slight difference, but there is an overlap as well.
And if you haven't got a mentor, then and you're just starting out in your referee career, seriously go to your local RDO and find out who the mentors are and see what you can do about it, because trust me, you will learn loads and loads from it, and it will really help improve your game. Okay, moving on to another email here. This is from Dave Clark. There's a lot of Dave Clarks knocking about.
Yeah. Do I diddy?
Do I, yeah.
Is that the Dave Clark?
No. No, no good asking me, mate. I'm the worst DJ in the world, trust me. Dave is from, I think he's from Leicestershire, and he says, "Hi guys, why are professional players not punished for their on-field offensive, insulting and abusive language? An example of this is Arsenal versus Stoke on the 22nd of September. 25 minutes into the first half, Stephen and Zonzi is shown on TV as saying to Mike Dean, F*KU. And Zonzi had previously been spoken to, so why is that not followed up? I sent off two players in the same game for S6, off in a bus with one of the players coming up to me saying, 'I didn't know you could do that, as you never see it on TV, and well done for having the guts to do it.' Is this something that can be changed, or is it likely to continue for the future?"
Let me just clarify. There was a description there by used by our colleague that came in there. He talked about off in a bus.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what off in a bus means.
Yeah.
Explain off in a bus, please.
Well, I've just confused myself because I've tripped over it and I've lost the plot. I'm presuming it's foul and abusive.
It's the modern version of foul and abusive.
Yeah.
Foul and abusive were the old words in law many years ago. Off in a bus. Offensive, insulting, abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Off in a bus. Yeah. That's how you remember it. So the topic of off in a bus, foul and abusive, whichever way you wish to describe it, is an ongoing concern and has been for umpteen years. Mm. Now, me being a dodderer like I am at times.
A dodderer, brilliant.
I was looking around in some old RA stuff that I had up in the loft, a few weeks ago, and I come across a couple of old RA magazines. And I can't remember the date, but it's certainly the 60s and 70s when these magazines were printed. And on the front of them was dealing with offensive language. I think that was the title that was of the subject. So this is not something new, but this is something that we have to take control of. And I think that's what we're asked to do as referees. Take control and consider certain facets of it as regards, do we take action or do we not? I suggest we don't ignore it. I can't suggest and insist that every referee, when an offensive gesture comment is made, that the player has to be sent off. Some of it...
It would get ridiculous. So I think sorry to stop you in your tracks, sir. I think if you were to do that with everybody, then the game just wouldn't move on, would it?
Yeah.
The game that you're actually on wouldn't move on, and it would just ruin the game.
But I think where the question is coming in from here is because the role models are with the professional game. And this is where we take our leads from. The players lead the players. We look to our colleagues on the referees list and assistant referees list, et cetera, et cetera. The difficult side of this is the camera
just about to say,
can pick up a pimple on your forehead from 150 yards. Now, unfortunately, the referee might not be looking at that player having made his decision. And I suggest to anybody, if you want compliments from a player, I think you're in the wrong game. Players very rarely, in the heat of the battle, make compliments to referees. So consequently, I can't remember who the referee was for the Arsenal-Stoke game.
Mike Dean, I think.
Okay, yeah, it was Mike Dean. Good Mike. Good on Michael Dino. Michael will have made his decision and will not stand there looking at the player waiting for compliments. Mm. And if it's Wayne Rooney in this occasion, or whoever it was at the time, no, it can't have been Wayne Rooney because we're talking about Arsenal and Stoke.
There's another, come on, mate, engage.
Yeah, there's another gaffe. But you see where I'm coming from. Mike Dean will not stand in front of the player having made a decision and wait for comments. That's a no-no for referees. Mm. If you're expecting comments, wrong. Move on, get to the next phase of play. Yeah. Because if you don't need to be at that free kick position, move on to the next phase. We talk about that when we're coaching that. You know, so that's probably why you think, as a listener, that the referee has seen the incident of offensive, insulting language.
Because you see it on the TV.
Because you see
it
on the TV. Yeah. But that's not necessarily what happened between the referee and the player. Yeah, the player might have said those words. I can't deny that. But was the referee in earshot? Mm. Was the referee looking at the player? Does the referee know he actually said it? And on the pro game, in those high volatile worlds, I don't think on this occasion that Mike Dean was even aware that it happened. Mm. If he doesn't need to be standing on the blade of grass because there's nothing else to do, he will be on the next phase of play. He won't even be looking at the player. That's not an excuse. That is the reason, you know, and consequently, that's on this occasion why it was missed. I am confident in saying this, that if one of my colleagues on the professional game was insulted, abused, or a player used offensive language with him, I don't hesitate to say that my colleagues, if they were the victim of that, they would take the appropriate action. I stand by that.
Dave, thanks very much for your email. And as we speak to you, we are taking some of your tweets, and you've actually just tweeted us as we've been talking about him as well. He just basically says, looking forward to the next podcast, hashtag excited, birthday present. Brilliant.
Hello,
we
Dave.
Are taking your tweets as we record this. So if you want to post a message or you've got a question for us, please do. We actually posted a photograph of ourselves because somebody requested it, which I thought was genius.
I think they might regret
that.
Yeah,
they're definitely going to regret it. Yeah. But if you would like to get in touch with us through the website, please do, refereesworld.co.uk. You can contact us via Twitter if you're not following us. At refereesworld is our Twitter address. Or you can follow us and like us on Facebook. Just search for Referees World on Facebook. Finally, on the emails, our old mate Fez says, hi guys, the podcast rocks. I understand before a corner how to handle pushing in the box, but after the ball has been kicked, you always see the keeper push attacker away. At what point does it change from obstruction, impeding, to a penalty? We see it every week at grassroots and again on the telly. Keep up the good work.
I'll use the, I think it was Cardiff Spurs incident at the weekend when the referee gets one shot to see it. And on that occasion, I can't remember who the referee was for Cardiff Spurs. My apologies to my colleague on that. But his call was perfect. He actually saw the centre forward holding the goalkeeper's arm before or as the yeah before and during flight of the ball. And he consequently, he penalised the forward for the foul. The ball ended up in the back of the net because the goalkeeper was stopped from, you know, getting to the ball by the centre forward. You know, perfect shout, perfect type of situation. And managing corner kicks, as we covered on the last podcast, is a little bit difficult at times, but you've got to be clear in the way that you're going to do things. Be proactive, set it up and stop it before the kick is taken. Then, if you've got a problem in the box as the ball is in flight and there is a clear foul, don't be the only person that has seen it. That's my advice to people. Don't be the only person on the park that has seen a foul. If you're the only person in the park that's seen a foul, I question, are you seeing too much? Otherwise, if you're seeing too much, you're going to be given free kick, free kick, free kick, free
Don't
kick.
Be busy.
Don't be over busy. Mm. Be accurate, be concise, you know, and be observant. But, you know, try to gauge the mood of the game, what the players are expecting, the tempo and all those things. Mm. So, you know, watching out for free kicks is a priority for referees. Goalkeeper is certainly the man that makes himself evident, as we talked about.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. You can listen online at refereesworld.co.uk or you can listen via iTunes. And if you are a new listener, welcome to our world and thanks very much for finding us. Listen, there's loads and loads of referees that are not listening to our podcast. Why don't you do them a favour and us as well? And just let them know about the podcast. Send them a little email, send them a little tweet or a message on Facebook just to say, look, check out this this podcast. You'll love it. You'll learn from it and hopefully enjoy it as well. Right, still to come then, we're going to be discussing nutrition and hydration for health and performance. But here's an email which came up back in July. So Craig Rhodes, wherever you are and wherever you're listening, thanks very much for getting in touch. Apologies for taking this long to get to you, but we're here now. He basically says, can you do some stuff on handball and when you can judge it as a dogzo? So Rich has got his little box of tricks and his training cards and stuff. Dogzo or not dogzo?
Well, it's a good question, and there's two ways of looking at this. Let's take handball outside of the penalty area first, okay? Let's discuss handball and the merits of why you're going to recognise handball. So remember, handball has to be deliberate. What are the things that you're considered at? Because look, you're the active referee.
Yeah.
I'm the assessor now. What are the things that you're considering when you're out there refereeing and you decide it's handball or it's not handball even? So give me some ideas about what you're thinking.
If I was to blow for a handball, I would consider the positioning of the arms of the player concerned. Yeah. Now, in my eye, if a player is sort of holding their arms sort of out the way, particularly in a corner kick situation. Okay.
Do you think he's trying to avoid contact then?
With the ball?
By the arms, yeah. By pulling his arms down by the side.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So is it fair to say then, if he's trying to
That's
avoid...
That's accidental, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's not deliberate?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
When the ball gets kicked at somebody's arm, and then look, when it hits an arm or the shoulder or whatever, the opposing team will always shout for handball because players don't get it. They think because it's touched your arm, it's a handball, and it's not. Mm. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, fair comment.
My view of it is if the ball has been controlled by that arm, or it looks like there has been an element of control because of the motion of the player, maybe their arms are out at 45 degrees. To me, that would be element
so
of control.
So he's extending his arms. He's making himself slightly bigger.
Yeah.
So those are areas that you're considering. When he's making himself slightly bigger to stop the ball going past him or going to another player on the opposition, stopping a pass, you know,
arms
those things.
Going up in front of the faces as well and above
the
head.
That's a good point. What do you think
That's one that's always touch and go because if you're going to get clouted in the face by a ball, it could even be at close range as well, your instant reaction is to stick your arms up. But I suppose it's the positioning of your arms. Now, if your arms go up, it's very difficult to describe this when it's only audio, but if your arms go up above in front of your face and gradually go up above your head, bow in front of you, then you're going to get done because that's controlling the ball. So anybody that says that was going to hit you in the face, I don't go with that.
Okay, you mentioned a word, or not a word, but you talked about distance, I think, proximity. How far has the ball travelled when the player blocks the ball from hitting his face? That's something you have to consider. Do you think if he's had time to think about the ball travelling at him, oh, and I don't want to get hit in the face, if it's travelled, say, more than 2 or 3 yards, he's clearly thinking about this. And arguably, he could be penalised for handball because it's travelled some distance. He's had opportunity to make a headed challenge with heading the ball. But he decides to stop it hitting him in the face and spoiling his pretty face that he wants to put his hands up. So if it's travelled, you know, a fair distance, I would suggest that's handball.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's proximity and travelling distance of the ball from the last person that kicked it. Has the player got the opportunity to play it fairly, or is it just pure accidental? Okay. What about talking about handball out on the field of play? Important things. And you mentioned about a player who's not aware of the ball where it hits him. What's important for the referee to be able to make the judgment?
The positioning of the referee.
Of course. Of course.
It's going to be the most
optimum view, unobstructed view. If players are on the move, referees, think about your movement. If you're missing things, you might get away with apologising, sorry, I missed that blind side of me. How many times you could be able to get away with that during a game, though? You know, you can only make an apology so many times for missing a foul, missing a free kick, missing handball in particular, because it's, you know, sorry, I missed that. You can't keep going on saying that, because a player will turn around and say, how many times are you going to miss things? You know, so
your credibility is going to be questioned amongst other players.
Yeah. And so, of course, you've got a duty to find the right position, and finding the right position, right place, right time, et cetera, et cetera. You know, clear, unobstructed view to make a judgment of handball or not handball. You know, do you use gestures? Would you use a gesture?
In what way?
To say where it hit the player, where you think that the ball hit the player. Say on the chest or close
to the
chest.
Well, I would make it quite vocal. And it, depending on the pace of the ball, really, because if it's moving quickly and they're shouting handball, I would make it quite audible that I didn't think it was a handball. And then as I'm running to take up my next position, I might just tap my chest and say, that's where I believe it hit, or move on, or something like that.
It's a visual communication to aid people's understanding.
Will be people on the that weren't so close that would want to know where you as the referee felt the ball hit.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that you won't see my colleagues do on the professional game at that level is tap their body very often to say where it hit the player, because they can be proved to be wrong on replays. You know,
and do they get taught that then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not encouraged not to use too many gestures for sake of being gimmicky. And being proven wrong, because you can give an opinion through a simple gesture, but then on replays, TV, video replays and anything like that, the referee was clearly wrong.
Undermines your authority then, doesn't it?
It does a little bit, you know, but it's a genuine decision that's made, whether it's right or whether it's wrong. It's always an honest decision, you know, but it could be honestly wrong. So be it. So, handball, let's go into the penalty area, or closer to the penalty area now, because our colleague who sent the question in, just remind me who that was, Dan?
Craig Rhodes.
Craig Rhodes, okay, Craig. Thanks for sending it in, Craig. He's asking the question about handball and denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, that's the wording. That's the wording for the referee to focus on. The action of handball has to be deliberate. That's your first judgment, isn't it? Yeah. So let's break this down into areas on the field of play. Left-hand side, right-hand side, and in the middle. Now, what about the defender or even the goalkeeper that comes out? Now, there are so many scenarios we could talk about, so I don't want to sort of open it up to sort of more than two, three scenarios, because it can be a long conversation, this. But the direction of the ball when the handball has occurred, you're going to make a decision of deliberate, yes or no. And if you've said it's deliberate, it's going to be a free kick. Mm-hmm. If it's outside the penalty area, it's going to be inside. It's going to be a penalty kick if it's inside. Now, the direction of the player moving at goal as regards what happened and the position of the defender. Make your decisions. What are you looking for as a referee? What will say to you, I'm not going to send him off because...
Because you've got to monitor the direction of the ball more than anything else as well. Because, it may have hit the player, but it may not be directly going towards the goal, or it may be going, it may be rebounding from another player, or it may be that other players behind have gone into cover which means that if it had gone past the player who had initially handballed it, it might have been stopped in its tracks by another player that was further back towards the goal.
So it's not obvious, isn't it?
No. And because it's coming in from an angle, so if it's coming in from the left or the right, then, you know, in
Where is it going?
Yeah, where's it going to go? And if you're going down through the middle, okay, then you're going to be a lot more on target to the goal, aren't you?
Yeah.
So if you take a shot and you're right on, and it's on target and you're going down through the middle of the goal, the chances are that is going to be more towards goal. So if the arm goes up to stop it, then that is obviously a bit more blatant.
It's a very difficult one to sort of talk about in terms of do you or don't you send off, but it's all about positioning and where the ball has gone, what has happened, what is the impact of the handball? Has it denied an obvious goal-scoring opportunity? I think that's the message I'd like to sort of leave with that. I'm not trying to avoid it. It's something that we might visit again, but look at the position of people, look at where the ball has gone, look at the impact of the handball and the opportunity. Did it deny obvious? That's what I want to say. If there's other people that can stop that goal-scoring chance, that's not obvious goal-scoring opportunity.
It's one of those decisions, isn't it, that as a referee, before you can really give that decision and be confident with it, you need to be another two steps ahead of yourself to give it. Because, like you say, it could be that one or maybe two other players may have the opportunity to stop it going in the back of the net.
Reading the game, isn't it?
So, yeah, it is. Absolutely reading the game.
So, handball, it's not an easy judgment to make. Qualities to get it right, you know, good positioning. Good positioning, reasonable proximity. Distance that the ball has travelled. If it's been played, say, from 10 yards, the player's got certainly time to think about where his arms are positioned. Sometimes from a position of, say, 2 or 3 yards, the player's got no opportunity to get his arms out of the way. However, if he's making himself a bigger target and spreading himself in front of goal or stopping the ball go past him, a defender sliding tackle, all those sorts of things, then that, for me, is suggesting that the player is intending to stop the ball going past him.
If they're making themselves
bigger. And that's a handball
offence. Yeah, absolutely.
That is a handball offence, and it should be penalised.
OK, what about when the ball comes in from a corner and it drops down and bounces and then bounces up and hits your arm then? There's another one.
OK, we're going so wide, wide with this now. Let's go a little bit further then. Think about the playing conditions for the players.
Yeah.
What options do they have when the conditions are hard ground? Hard ground, maybe a frosted ground even, not just in August or September.
It's going to bounce more, isn't it?
It's going to bounce a bit more. So there will be contact between the ball and the hand a little bit more. But when the ground is a little bit muddier and the ball stays low on the ground, there's less handball calls. Yeah. So I ask the referees to think about the circumstances in why the ball is making contact with the arm. Is it the fault of the players because of his position of the arms and what he might be doing to stop the ball going past? Or is it the conditions that are catching him out? And that's why I would suggest then it's not deliberate. Another debate, another day.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, it's one of these debates that could go on, but we, unfortunately, on this one, don't have time to do so because we need to move on to our next subject.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon. Thanks for listening today. We're online, refereesworld.co.uk, on Twitter, @refereesworld, and you can like our Facebook page as well. Just like the Facebook page by searching for Referees World. Okay, right then. Got to say hello to Harris Rashid, who tweeted us last time because he feels like a celebrity having had a mention on the last podcast. And it was Harris that mentioned that we should take a picture of ourselves and send out, which we've done. And we hope that you weren't offended by our ugly mugs.
Yeah.
Right, okay, final topic of conversation this time around. Nutrition and hydration for health and performance on the field of play. Is what we're about to discuss now here on the Referees World podcast.
Yeah, I think this might be a revisit this one, Dan.
I think we have done, but I think it's important to revisit some of these things.
I do. But certainly at this time of the season where we are, here we are, middle to late September.
It's about drilling the information in, isn't it? And just keep drilling it in.
It's a reminder.
You know,
yeah, it's a reminder. For everybody to keep doing it, because hydration, good eating, good habits do help performance.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. The advice I would give to anybody is consider what you're eating and drinking before a game. You know, We all
and
have,
after a game as well.
Of course, you know, recovery time is important, you know, and I mean, if you were to get in contact with any of our senior referees, sort of level threes and above, they are given some really good advice on looking after themselves.
I was going to ask you at this point, actually, do our senior colleagues at the higher levels, are they given a particular diet plan that they have to stick to, or how does it work? Because obviously we know that football teams are pretty much... military.
Our colleagues at the senior levels are given guidance. Simon Brevik is the guy that looks after the fitness and the diet, nutrition and that. We have a team above us, but Simon leads it. And Simon clearly gives some real good advice to those boys out there that are working on the professional game. The change in profile of referees over the last 10 years or so is for me, look, I'm a little 5'6" guy. When I was running around and I was active, I was about 11 stone, maybe 11'4", 11'5". Now, since my retirement days, I've put on a couple of pounds here and there.
So you're 11 foot wide now.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks for that. But the profile of referees has changed because the game is far more demanding. The game is quicker. The ball is lighter. The laws are changing slightly here and there.
Would you suggest that perhaps this is why some of the top referees are younger these days than perhaps they were in sort of 20, 30 years ago?
Well,
because they are, you know, some referees at a very high standard that are 26, 27. You know, credit to them because they've been doing it for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people like Michael Oliver.
Yeah, that's the guy
fantastic referee. Yeah. Really, really good referee. He's brought into the professional game at the right time. He was ideally the right age because it happened for him. But he was
a footballer, wasn't he? He played for Newcastle United. I'm sure he was.
Oh, you know a little bit more about Michael than I do.
I'm sure that Michael Oliver was on Newcastle United's books. Didn't make the grade or was injured, and wanted to carry on within football. So took up the whistle, and a lot of footballers would never even dream of doing it because, you know. Because they wanted to be a footballer.
Yeah, good decision for Michael.
He's, look at his
career.
Yeah,
he's a FIFA referee and an extremely good referee as well. But, you know, it's not just Michael Oliver. There are other young referees in there. But generations of referees come. We all have our time. There are some good referees, great referees in my view, and that's perhaps a little bit biased, but I think they're all great referees. Mm. They know exactly what they need to do. They're so professional, the select group referees, and they're well-led by the team of Mike Riley and all the guys up there with Ray Olivier and that. I just admire them so much and I wish I had my time again, but it's not going to be. So I'm helping in my role to find those next select group referees. And if we can find them, that's what we want to do. That's what we push on for. But the individual profile of the referees, there's not so many chunky referees, let me say that. There are more slimline, stealth-like referees. And that's the profile that the game demands, really.
Yeah, it does.
You know, we have to keep up with it. We can't change. So let's talk about this bit of diet and bit of hydration. What are the basics for you, Dar?
Never skip meals, particularly in the morning, breakfast time. Is it's the meal of the day, isn't
healthy
it?
Healthy eating. Yeah. I mean, the younger generation of referees burn it off easier, whereas the guys in their 40s have to work a little bit more at it. So they have to be a bit more careful about what they eat. And, you know, drinking. Drinking is a bit...
Fluid, all the way.
But I don't mean alcohol. Mm. Alcohol is not necessarily good. I'm not qualified to make comment about the sports drinks, so I'm going to avoid those. I wouldn't go with the high caffeine drinks, if I use the word, or the two words, Red Bull, and I don't mean Formula One racing, but the Red Bull drink, and those similar drinks, they are high with sugar, high in caffeine, and I'm not sure, without consulting my learned colleagues, if they're good or not for refereeing, but I don't believe they are. I don't believe they are. So it's water, squash, you know, plenty of water, good quantities of water, days before a game. Get your body ready. If your body's ready, your mind's ready, and you're going to go out there and give a good performance.
Absolutely.
That's what we're about.
Fruit and veg with every meal, good sources of protein, etc. Broccoli. I'm a big fan of broccoli.
I like cauliflower.
Yeah, cauliflower, broccoli, like that cauliflower, kind of stuff. Yeah. Eat plenty of that thing.
Carrots, they're good for
carrots.
Carrots are good for eyesight, apparently.
Beans,
Dan.
And cabbage.
Yeah. Well, keep away.
Well, you obviously don't eat too many carrots, then.
You're going to be.
I mean, really cruel to you and your personal.
My senior years.
Yeah.
My senior
years. It shouldn't be like that. But
also, I like carrots because they are good for your eyesight and they make your hair curly. Mm. You know, apparently. What else do I like? Brussels sprouts.
Can't stand Brussels.
Oh, lovely.
No, can't
lovely.
Stand them.
Good iron. They're full of iron Brussels sprouts, you see.
Can't do that, mate.
I don't think they come from Belgium, but, you know, Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, no. Link. Oh, whatever.
Link. okay, so what sort of quantities are we going to be drinking for a day, you know?
Match 3 or 4 litres a day.
Yes,
minimum.
Please. Yeah, yeah. At least during sort of, let's say, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, keep your about 2 litres at least.
Thursdays and Fridays, I would be going to the loo a lot more than I normally would do.
Yeah.
Purely because I used to drink bottles and bottles of water.
Yeah. I was reminded the other day that a sure way of finding out that you're well hydrated is to look at the colour of your urine. Mm-hmm. If it's white, you're well hydrated. If it's yellow, orange, that, you're not so well hydrated.
If it's green, go to the doctors.
So if it's not a good colour, yeah, you need to think about it and take some action. But that's the advice. Yeah. Drink plenty of fluids before the day. Make sure you eat, because you highlighted that. You've got to eat. You know, beans on toast, honey, things like that, marmalade, something to feed your muscles so you can work. And, you know, fruits are good.
And some fats. You are allowed to eat some fats.
Of course.
If you do it within reason.
Yeah. Not a portion of chips at 2:30 for a 3 o'clock kickoff, though, Dad.
I do know a Premiership assistant referee who does have a Big Mac before every game.
And yeah, I'm not sure if he's playing up to that.
No,
one,
but
you know, he might do on his travels.
Well, it's, you know, if it's a tradition and we're all traditionalists, we have our little routines, don't we?
Well, going back approximately 10 years now, when I first came off the national list, I decided to go travelling with my colleague and close friend, who's now a Premiership referee, and we travelled all over the country. He was a level 2 referee at the time before he got to Football League. And our ritual on a Saturday, wherever we were going, we would always find the local McDonald's. We'd have a coffee because we like latte, cappuccinos and that. And we found some nice restaurants up near Barnet one day when they were in the conference. But also when we went north to Southport, places like that, we found the local McDonald's and they did a good coffee. I won't concede, or maybe I will then. We did have a small portion of McD chips.
We're all guilty at times, aren't we?
Guilty pleasures. Yeah, guilty pleasures.
So, you know, there's various menus you can search online. There's loads you can do for you. But a lot of this dietary stuff is down to your own commitment as well and your own disciplines.
Yeah, I've got a little note down here. Post-match and training, consume 1 to 1.5 litres of fluid for every hour of exercise. 1 to 1.5 litres for every hour of exercise.
That's fair.
You know, yeah. And like I say, do it before, not just after, you know, and prep yourself as well as possible. And I'm sure you'll find that your performance will, you know, will benefit.
I'm sure this is a subject that we could go, we could do a whole episode on, which is something we need to look at in the future, I think, because
I think, referring back to previous podcasts, Dave Callow.
I did Dave Callow.
A podcast with Dave Callow about middle of 2012, I think, or maybe a little bit earlier than that, relating to this type of thing. And if any listeners are out there and haven't heard the podcast with Dave Callow, it's on there somewhere. And
if you're on iTunes listening, if you go to the list on iTunes, you'll see every podcast we've done, there'll be a description of what's in the episode. So it's worth going back 2 years to listen to some of the earlier podcasts, because like I say, there's a lot of good information on these podcasts. And as Rich said, Dave Callow, who's the physio with Western Supermare.
Western Supermare.
He's still there,
club.
Is he?
Yeah, he's still there.
He's a good man. He works magic with his hands, having had some work done by him last year after my snowboarding accident.
Yeah, he stuck his thumbs right into my calves at one time, and that hurt. You know,
I thought you were going to say something else then. I was like, Rich, where are you going with this?
But Dave Callow, he's qualified referee. Yeah. That's why we know him. He's registers every year with us, and he's a member at West Somerset RA. Yeah. So, you know, he's a true football man and looks after referees well.
Right, listen, okay, we're done for now. Thanks very much for listening on this particular episode. Hopefully you've picked up something off the back of this. Again, if you want to get in touch with us at any point, please do through the website, refereesworld.co.uk. You can follow us on Twitter And Rich is pointing at me.
Well, I'll just about to say, before we sign off, just leave our colleagues with an idea of what we're going to cover next time.
Yes, OK.
Yeah, I'm going to involve our local RA colleagues, get the chairman of our local RA to answer a few questions that we're going to pose at him. So we're going to use that opportunity to discuss RA issues and how the RA is helping locally here in West Somerset, and in particular our area, Taunton and Bridgewater. Whether or not we can take it any further afield, we'll find out, but we're going to be hopefully talking to David Steele, chairman of West Somerset RA, in his first year as chairman, but a level 5 referee, and we'll have a chat with him.
Also, if you're if you'd like to be featured yourself or your RA on one of our upcoming podcasts, then you know, drop us a line, get in touch, let us know, and let the rest of the refereeing community know what you're doing, because we can all learn from each other. And like I say, if you want to get in touch with us, you can just get in touch via the website refereesworld.co.uk, on Twitter at refereesworld, or by liking the Referees World podcast page on Facebook, and we will speak to you soon.
The download is complete.